Welcome to the committee. Would you want to start?
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you for having us here today. My name is Julie Blackburn, and I am one of the assistant directors for the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources. We have been asked to come and present our biennial budget proposed reductions. And I'm going to, in the interest of trying to keep it simple and quick, instead of doing the PowerPoint, I'm just going to go over the PowerPoint handout that I have in front of you. Just a review of the agency mission. We are a small organization. Our mission is to improve and protect Minnesota soil and water resources by working in partnership with local units of government and also private landowners. We focus on private lands, which is 78% of the land area in the state of Minnesota. Our business model is that we have a large local delivery system. We estimate that right now there's about 450 employees that are staffing the program statewide for all of the local units of government. We're a small agency. We only have 78 full-time employees. We also try to make sure that between our state agency perspective and all of those local units of government, that there's a balance between the state perspective and the local focus on priorities. We also do an extraordinary job of leveraging federal and local funds. As you know, we are very successful in leveraging at least a dollar for every one of the dollars that we are able to put on the ground. That is usually the minimum. I just wanted to review before we got into the new reductions, the reductions that we received as this biennium appropriation. For the 2010 and 11 general fund reductions, we received a reduction of $1.017 million. That was a 9.7% reduction in our operations. We're managing that a number of different ways. First of all, we're focusing on core programs. We need to make sure that we keep those core focuses intact. The things that we do best, we need to continue. We are keeping a couple of key vacancies open, including one of our senior management staff that I supervise, and so far we've had to kind of share the burden of that. We're going to keep that one open. We have eliminated others. Four other vacancies will be eliminated. We recently did a realignment of central office staff. We used to have a banking easement specialist and a conservation easement specialist. We put them all together so that they can fluctuate based on workload. Currently, our easement team of four is processing over 400 easements from ACUB to RIM to the Wetland Bank Program, CREP, and now the clean water easements. So that's one of the things that we've been trying to implement. We also have reduced travel, training, and meeting costs. One of the programs that we got last year was a portion of the Rural Preserves program that we're implementing. We've managed to do all of the training for that through narrated online PowerPoint presentations that take everybody step by step through the Rural Preserves program and the conservation management planning. And the rest of the training we've done either through already arranged events or we did 4 2-hour training sessions over conference calls. And that was actually very effective. So we're trying things like that in order to reduce everybody's costs, including our LGUs, taking the time and expense to go to meetings. We are also implementing program efficiencies. We recently signed a memorandum of understanding with the NRCS regarding swamp busters and the Wetland Conservation Act. And this will provide a great deal of understanding about how those two programs work together. And we believe it's going to make implementation both for our agencies and the local units of government much better. So we're trying to make our programs more efficient. We are also increasing with these increased responsibilities that we've received, such as the Rural Preserves Program. We also have a bigger board. So in addition to all of these cuts, we're also having to manage bigger responsibilities, and we did receive 3 new board members. I do believe that they add a lot, but it also is more expense for our agency. So that was our operation cuts of almost 10% already this biennium. Our general fund of reductions in the program areas was 11.9%, almost 12%, $2.8 million. And the program reductions include cost share, which took the majority, the brunt of the reductions at $1.37 million. NRBG, $0.4 million. The SWCD service grants, which include the RIM inspection grants that go out to SWCDs, was cut. And we also did a $60,000 cut to those commissions and boards, and a $300,000 cut to our drainage records modernization. So on top of that, we have our program our proposed reductions. The instructions that we received in order to go through this exercise.
Before you go into the proposed reductions, Representative Hansen has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Blackburn, maybe you covered this, but I was looking in kind of comparison to the other agencies, and in your executive office, it's Mr. Jashke and you and support staff. Do you have like a government relations person within your executive office, or do you have any press person that would be like equivalent in some of the agencies in their commissioner's office? I'm trying to get an idea of your administrative overhead.
Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, we do have one other person that's part of our executive team, and he's actually here with us today, and that's Steve Woods. And so the way that the three of us work is John's in charge of obviously everything, and then I do the program policy and the development of the programs, and Steve's in charge of field operations, so everything we develop, he's in charge of making sure they get implemented in the field. We have one...
Excuse me. Representative Hansen has a follow-up on that.
Madam Chair, Ms. Blackburn, so, and you have a technical background, and Mr. Jashke does, and Mr. Woods does. You're not a press, you do your own press, and you do your own government relations, and you have the technical expertise to present that. You don't have an additional person that's paid in your administration for press or for government relations, is that correct?
Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, that's correct. We have one person who is our communications director who does our website and everything for the entire agency. And obviously, because there's only that one person in charge of all of that, pretty much everything you see here are the things that I develop myself. The technical expertise that our leadership team brings is pretty strong. John Jashke with a background in hydrology and public administration. Steve Woods is a engineer with a master's degree in business administration, and my master's degree is in systems ecology. So when we're working on these things, we are kind of needing to go and learn new specializations to put together these programs.
Thank you. Proceed.
Okay, Madam Chair, back to on the bottom right-hand side, the proposed reductions. The instructions that we were given was to have a 3% operation reduction, and that meant any of the unspent funds in 2010 and the budgeted amount for 2011. We were also instructed to find reductions of 6% in our program funds, the non-operational funds, and that's the unspent funds for 2010 and the budgeted amount for 2011. It excludes all other funds, any of our interagency partnership agreements, and the Clean Water Fund and Lasard-SAMS funds. So on the top left-hand side for the operations, you see there what I have identified as our fiscal year 2010 and our fiscal year 2011 reductions. On the administrative portion for 2010, we are taking it out of the technical assistance that we have been supporting the Southeast Flood recovery effort. And in 2011, a portion of it is from the Southeast Flood reduction, Southeast Flood recovery effort, and also drainage assistance and our WACA oversight. So those are staffing positions, essentially. On the program reduction targets for fiscal year 2010, we were looking at $384,000. Fiscal year 2011, $630,000. Fiscal year 2010, we're looking at the Clean Water Legacy, not Clean Water Fund, but the Clean Water Legacy funds that were appropriated in 2007 and 2008. There were some remaining funds there that were targeted for ag watershed restoration. Because of the way that those have gone out, we first required a study, and they are working on the study right now. The second portion was for implementing the results of that study, and what we are planning is that they would be eligible for Clean Water Fund competitive grants, the same as others, so that this would be a turn back to the general fund. On the fiscal year 2011, rather than take cuts, percentage cuts off of additional programs, we chose to eliminate funding for three different areas. One of them is the drainage Assistance grants, those are the drainage records modernization grants. There was only $100,000 appropriated that year. And rather than cut it partially, we eliminated it. And we did the same with the WACA violations. Those are grants to the 11-county metro area to do added enforcement on major violations. And concurrent with that, the DNR enforcement pass-through of $100,000. And then we are looking at the returned grant funds. Some of our grant funds are not executed because a landowner is backed out or they've found funding elsewhere. And so those grant funds are returned to us, and we would be returning those to the general fund.
If you can just hold for a moment, Representative Doty has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Blackburn, I'm not looking for like a every single instance thing here, but in general, are we, especially in the reduction of programs, are we covering these with either some other part of your agency or some other agency, or are they just simply being eliminated?
Madam Chair and Representative Doty, they are simply being eliminated. On the summary of all of the reductions, those that were put in the biennium appropriations and these that are additional, it is a reduction of $5.2 million or 15% overall reduction from 2008 and 2009 to this biennium. And with that, I would take any questions.
Representative Hanson.
Madam Chair and Ms. Blackburn, are there any counties that are no longer providing any funds to match the state money that is provided as a general service grant to soil and water conservation districts?
Madam Chair and Representative Hanson, off the top of my head, I know that there's reductions as far as absolutely not funding anymore. I would need to double check and get back to you.
Madam Chair, Ms. Blackburn, do you know how many counties have done a significant reduction in their allocation to SWCDs?
Madam Chair and Representative Hanson, I don't, but I can get that back to you, that information to you.
Why don't you give it to the committee and we'll get it around to everybody.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Hanson.
One more. Ms. Blackburn, with the general service grants and with the cost share grants, can you give us a, if you don't have it now, but to get to the committee, a list of the districts that and their usage of general service or cost share grants? We'd like to see if there are any counties that are not using the dollars and what that looks like among the 81 districts.
Madam Chair and Representative Hanson, absolutely, we'll get that information too.
Do you have anything else here?
No, I don't.
Members? You have put, you talked about the Clean Water legacy money. I mean, the Clean Water, yeah, legacy money. And now we're talking about the new constitutional money. You've done a request for proposal. Has all that money been, not that we're going to cut it, that's not why I'm asking. Has that money all gone out, or at least you know where it's going?
Madam Chair, most of the money has gone out. Yesterday, at about 5:30, I believe, we submitted to you our report on the Clean Water Fund, the appropriations, and how those monies have been allocated. For all of the conservation easements on the riparian buffers, all of those monies have been allocated several times over. We are working on the easements for the wellhead protection area. They are very targeted towards only 7 different areas in the state. On the competitive grants, the programs that were allocated for that, all of the money has been allocated except for the feedlots. Not all of that money went out the door. We're setting up a meeting with PCA and Department of Ag to try to figure out what we can do to make sure that gets out the door, whether it's a lack of awareness or whether it's just the farm economy that people cannot submit their 25% cost share for that. Other than that, it's been allocated. It's out the door.
Was there a, when you put out your RFP or the new money, was there a lot of interest? Were there lots of, or was it just moderate? Can you give me just some sort of judgment on that?
Absolutely, Madam Chair. There was $44 million requested for the $13 million that we had available.
That says a lot.
Yes.
Were a lot of them good programs? I mean, of the ones that you did not fund, were we short dollars that we might have otherwise spent?
Madam Chair, there were many, many strong proposals on submitted to us. The amount of work that needs to be done out there for protection of surface waters is extraordinary, and we have, you know, these 440 staff that are out there ready to do that work. What we are working on right now through our training program coordinator is making sure that we do an assessment of all of the needs out there as far as how do we make sure that they continue to enhance their grant application, so we always make sure that we're funding the best. We put in new priorities and requirements on this RFP in that they had to demonstrate the pollution reduction calculations, how they were going to target and prioritize. So we know that the ones that we funded are stellar. We know that there are many others that we would fund that would do extraordinary things also. Can I get to them?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Hansen, then Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Blackburn, the Area 2 Board, the Red River Valley Board, and the Minnesota River Board, if we eliminated funding for those in the next biennium, would they be able to exist with fee-for-service without state funding?
Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, I would feel much more comfortable if I was able to come back after speaking with them about that. I believe that they leverage those monies extensively, particularly the Area 2 Board. I know that they do some extraordinary work with that minuscule amount of funding that's provided to them.
Representative Gill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in the comments from John Jasky, the first comment that he's got there in the operating reductions talks about only filling two of three engineering positions and using contractor labor. Would any of those contractor consultants be the people that you've eliminated, or how do you work that?
Madam Chair and Representative Scalzi, no, they would not be anybody that we have eliminated. We have chosen not to fill additional positions. So we're going to continue to operate in the Southeast as we have, and that means using contractors where it makes the most sense on some certain projects that are probably a little bit larger in scale than our engineering staff are able to kick out in a very quick turnaround time.
And then, thank you, Mr. Chair. I had another question on the wetland conservation oversight funds, and so this report says that fewer site evaluations will occur, and administrative penalty orders will be deferred or diminished. And it just seems that this is the heart of what we're trying to do here. So I'm kind of wondering, to save $40,000 and then do fewer of the administrative penalty orders, I guess doesn't make a lot of sense to me related to the rest of the budget. I would think we'd keep that and cut something else, but maybe you'd care to comment on that.
Madam Chair and Representative Scalzi, obviously in extraordinary budget times, there are some difficult things that need to be done. We do know that in the metro area and actually statewide, we have seen a reduction of wetland activity and enforcement activity of 30% just in the last 2 years, 60% since 2006. So we believe that that is an appropriate cut based on the reduction in activity. Does that mean that we would prefer to cut it? No. Obviously, we believe that those programs are important. But we also want to make sure that we stick to our core delivery system, delivering conservation. So we chose to make that cut based on the activity that's out there, both on conservation program implementation, such as getting the cost share funds out there, and a reduction then in the wetland activity statewide. So that's why we made that tough choice.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
One more question.
One last question, because we're going to move on.
Ms. Blackburn, in difficult times, you mentioned that we have to make some difficult choices. Has your agency had any discussions with either the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources or the Minnesota Department of Agriculture about mergers or consolidation.
Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, no, not to my knowledge. I do know that we share a number of different programs. We have a staff person that is paid half between Department of Natural Resources and half us in order to get private land conservation on the ground. We haven't, as far as I understand, engaged in any other discussions.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mr. Stepperud. Members, I announced at the beginning we are going to start public testimony at 9 o'clock. So this should be fairly short. But if we finish public testimony, we won't come back tonight. But otherwise, I will just recess to make sure public has a full time to be heard. Mr. Stepperud.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the division. For the record, my name is Arnie Stepperud. I'm a planning analyst on the Parks Program at the Metro Council. I prepared a handout for you that's in your packet that's a basis for my testimony today. The governor has recommended a reduction in the general fund appropriation for fiscal year 2011 and going on into future years for regional parks operations and maintenance. Basically, if you look at the first table in the report, there was an unallotment in fiscal year 2010 and 11 of $86,000, and he's recommending an additional $112,000 reduction for fiscal year 2011, 2012, and 2013, plus ratifying the unallotment from 10 and 11 moving forward, so that the net effect is that there'd be a $198,000 reduction in the general fund appropriation for parks operations and maintenance. Table 2 illustrates what that means for each of the 10 regional park implementing agencies that I work with. This money is distributed under a formula in state law, and I applied that formula using data from last year and made the assumption that there wouldn't be too much of a change there. So you see the amount of that $198,000, how that would be reduced, if you will, amongst the 10 park agencies. And then the final table 3 illustrates what each agency would do in light of the fact of this reduction, if assuming that it was implemented. So with that, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Well, first of all, thank you for laying things out so very clearly. It's very easy to see and understand. Just looking at the back, the one thing that troubles me at first glance is reducing lifeguards this summer. That does seem to be short-sighted. Questions for members? I don't see any questions. Thank you. This was very clear. So thank you for doing that. We will go on to public testimony on the governor's supplemental budget. We have had more people sign up than we originally thought we were going to sign up, so we've just to let you all know that. We will start with Steve Morris, Executive Director of the Minnesota Environmental Partnership. And I think you're bringing other folks with you. No. Pardon?
He's on Senate time, of course.
We can start with Steve Sunderland if he's here. Is he here? Why don't we do that? And bring up, and Dr. Catherine Kelly are coming up together. That would be fine. Welcome to the committee. We appreciate your coming and appreciate your willingness to testify.
Madam Chair, my name is Stephen Sunderland. I'm a farmer from Chippewa County in western Minnesota, and I'm also an SWCD, or Soil and Water Conservation District Supervisor, and at this time I'm President of the State Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. As you already know, I'm sure we're very concerned about what happens with the Bowser budget. The SWCDs rely on the funds from this budget not only to maintain our technical staff in the field out there, but also for program dollars. And these program dollars go out to private landowners to protect our natural resources. When we use this base funding from Bowser, we can many times leverage state, local, and federal dollars into practices that protect the soil and water and forests of this state. This ability to use these dollars to leverage from other sources of funds, such as clean water legacy grants, equip funds, and others, allows us to really maximize the work that we can get done on the land out there. That leverage ability is a great help, as it not only brings money into our communities, but it also creates jobs out there when you have construction practices and things like that. The SWCDs provide the technical help at the local level to private landowners for many different programs. Just some of the things the SWCDs have been involved in lately are filter strips along water courses, stream bank lakeshore protection practices, forestry plans, wetland restorations, the Wetland Conservation Act implementation, cover crops, local water planning, land protection, wildlife easements, and many other programs. We're involved in many things at the local level, and without the Bowser funding, we'd lose our local one-on-one delivery system. That system is statewide, and it has public recognition and respect as a place to go for conservation questions. We don't want to lose our skilled technicians out there in the field. And also with Bowser's budget, we have a very good reporting system for accountability, and as you legislators and the public demands more and more accountability, the Bowser's reporting system that the districts report to not only account for the dollars that go out there, it also accounts for the projects that we actually put on the land. And as you know, Mother Nature changes continually. They're talking floods this spring, lots of problems are coming up, and the SWCD is there ready to be there and help, but we need the state through Bowser's funding to provide this technical assistance that we can out on the field. So to sum it up, we as an association position, the Bowser 2010-11 supplemental budget reductions are consistent with the position of the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts to protect SWCD base budgets from further reductions in funding to ensure the continued effective delivery of conservation on private lands and the ability to leverage other private, local, and federal funds. With that, thank you for your time, and we try and answer some questions.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Catherine Kelly, and I am from Rendell County, Minnesota, the county seat of Olivia, Minnesota. There I serve on the local district board. I'm also an area of Minnesota Association Soil Water Conservation Director over 11 counties. We've reorganized to become more efficient. And also I serve as the state Soil and Water Conservation Vice Chairperson of Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. I am a landowner, a farm operator, as well as other community involvement in my county. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today with you to visit a bit about our support for you to continue support to the Bowser organization. Bowser provides, as you know, the major support to the work that we do in conservation efforts on the ground. We at the local level provide the technical work and the hands-on. Our staff at the local Soil and Water Conservation District are the people who get the work done on the ground. And we provide for the, as you heard Mr. Sunderland say, the private contractors, the private producer, the technical assistance as well as the education for that. We provide the ability to make the investment in the future. We come with solid knowledge working towards those practices, and they are well researched. In addition, there are educational opportunities provided to the district citizens and the youth by the funding given to Bowser. So we look forward to the future with the youth being educated as well. In addition to the work that is funded through Bowser and the efforts they make with us, we are afforded some educational, some opportunities for employment, I should say, whereby the projects that are put on the ground are often needing of having local contractors come in to do the terracing work that was done on my farm. I needed to hire, with the support of cost share, a contractor to come in to do the terracing, to do the restoration of the land. In addition, crop cover, seed producers are required. We plant in CRP lands, we plant native grasses as are required. And so there's economic development that takes place beyond the funding that is provided by the Bowser organization. We also maintain high quality water. We maintain water by buffer strips along riparian ways as well as ditch buffers. And we also do a sampling of waters to make certain that they are remaining as clean as they can. We also have a track record with Bowser. Soil water conservation folks are effective at implementing the conservation efforts. We have the technical and educational knowledge to do that work, and we all work with great transparency. I had the pleasure last year of serving on a committee with Bowser. When we talk about transparency and quality of work, there was a requirement for a performance review and assistance program. I worked with a committee to have this implemented, and the recent report has shown several counties that have benefited from the work that Bowser has done. In addition, there are state dollars, press releases, and by the way, this information has been submitted to both the House and the Senate for their review, and I hope that you have reviewed it. There also have been other additional state dollars for water quality projects that have been put forward through the Board of Water and Soil Resources. Legislative reports come forward, and we have, as you are aware, I have copied a page from the booklet. It's the SWC guidebook that is also supported online, as well as a public document outlining what particular projects have been done under the auspices of Bowser and cost sharing and leveraging of funds. So we have been very ambitious with Bowser, and we request that you seriously consider maintaining the funding to Bowser. Most of our soil water conservation districts operate, if you will, on a shoestring. We are at the mercy, if you will, of county commissioner boards to fund us within their budget. And we also leverage funds, and we also work very hard at grant writing to support the work that we do. However, with the technical assistance and the support of Bowser and their guidance, we could not be as successful as we are presently. Again, Minnesota Soil and Water Conservation is very fortunate to be able to work with Bowser, and as Mr. Sunderland had said, our position is in alignment with what Bowser has been working on. Thank you. With that, I'll entertain a question or two.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Dr. Kelly. You represent farm country out there, and sometimes farm country gets painted in a negative light, not doing anything to be in the light of conservation. It sounds like you've had some good outcomes in some of the projects. Would that be an accurate statement, that we are doing stuff out there to address conservation concerns in farm country, and you are seeing some positive outcomes as well?
Yes, Madam Chair, as well as Representative Hamilton.
Hamilton.
Thank you. And we have had positive outcomes. I can, from my own land, can see positive outcome. And in addition, we do work with some of the rural communities as well, in encouraging for them the use of rain gardens and other conservation efforts within the city itself. We also have been working very closely with county commissioners in our various counties, because we know we must mesh together, work together. We do not wish to be rolled in with them, because grassroots representation is very important, and we are an elected board, as you all know, and yet we feel it's very important to work together. So we, in some cases in counties, co-locate. We work with our water boards, and it's a very companionable, collegial work. And yes, thank you for recognizing that we do things in the rural area, but we also do with work with the communities.
Representative Hamilton, I don't think any of us have any doubts that they do good work. We have a, and I, none of us are sitting here looking forward to what we're, the task we have, which is probably to reduce the budget in three or four areas by about $13-15 million. We don't have a target yet, but it is going to be in that neighborhood, I believe.
Madam Chair, to that point, do we know when we'll get the targets and when we can start working on a budget in this committee as well?
I would expect within the next day or two, because the forecast comes out today, and I'm waiting for the forecast, so I don't think we'll be long after the forecast. The February or March forecast comes out today, so that's what we've been waiting for.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To either one of the testifiers, I heard it talked about funding that the Stormwater Boards receive and flowing through the counties and that they leverage, are able to leverage. And I know from my own experience in Beltrami County that was like a 5-to-1 ratio. Are there any numbers that you're aware of or you could provide statewide as far as how much funding is leveraged using SWCD monies that's provided?
Cheryl Gunnison and Representative Petz need my eyes checked, I think.
Purcell,
thank you. I would refer or defer you to Bowser because they would be able to provide that information for you.
That's fine.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Sutherland and Dr. Kelly, you mentioned you work on the ground with folks on private lands, and I think as we've gone through the budgets before, the Department of Natural Resources also has a program for private land conservation. Do we need two programs for private land conservation in Minnesota?
Again, I'm not sure exactly which programs you're talking about, but I do know that we don't have a local DNR office in our county. We're basically the local people that they come to and ask about this, and I really believe in that one-on-one contact. So as far as the programs you're referring to, I'm not exactly sure which ones they are. We'd have to check into that and get back to you, but we are the local people that they go to. So,
Mr. Sutherland and Dr. Kelly, would the Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts support a merger of the Board of Water and Soil Resources with either the Department of Natural Resources or the Minnesota Department of Agriculture?
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, at this time, without knowing what that would look like or what you would merge, I guess I couldn't answer that. We are looking at streamlining things within our county with our county government and things like that. So we are in the process of looking at combining things or sharing or doing services like that. But as far as with them, I can't comment on that, I guess. So.
Are there any other questions or comments for these testifiers? We appreciate your coming. This is going to be a rough couple of weeks for us and you too, so we understand that.
Thank you again.
Next, we'll have Steve Moore, Cheryl Appleton, and Paul Hassan. Welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Steve Morris. I'm Executive Director of Minnesota Environmental Partnership. For those of you who may not be familiar with the partnership, we're the state's largest coalition of environmental conservation groups with a combined citizen membership of about 450,000 Minnesotans and over 80 member organizations, representing from Trout Unlimited to just about everybody in the environmental community. What I'd like to do today, and I know we have limited time, there are three of us here that would like to make some comments. First of all, thank you for taking the time to hear from us and others today on this important issue. What I would really like to focus on in terms of the budget discussion today is maintaining the integrity of the Clean Water, Land, and Legacy Act. As many of you know, it truly is a legacy piece of legislation, of legacy law that was passed and put into place by the public. 1.6 million voters, I don't think I need to remind you of that. Nearly 60% of the voters who voted on it supporting raising their taxes last year in order to protect the lakes, rivers, streams, forests, and resources of this state. Many of you probably saw a letter that we joined with about 30 other conservation, hunting, environmental groups sent around about a month ago. Actually, it was early January, 2 months ago. Laying out some of the benchmarks that we'll use to gauge whether or not the legislature and the governor are complying with what our interpretation is of the will of the public in supporting this constitutional amendment. I do have some copies of that if you'd like to see it, but I think many of you have probably seen it before, but I will leave a few copies here just so we can have a look at it. In that letter, we laid out three principles, and those principles are principles that we developed last year as a coalition of people who worked on it and supported the amendment. And we tried to keep them fairly simple, straightforward, and easy to interpret. Principle number one is that Minnesota's Great Outdoors must maintain its total state general fund share of the budget and not dip below the proportion that we had in the 2008-09 biennium, which is when the amendment was passed. That figure represented about a 30-year low in terms of the percentage of state general fund budget going to conservation and environmental programs. So what we said last year in the budget process was that any general fund cuts, this doesn't mean that because of the amendment, this part of the budget is immune from general fund cuts, but any general fund cuts must be proportionate to the rest of the budget. So if the rest of the budget goes down 3%, it's reasonable that the general fund share of environment conservation programs should go down 3%. The key is to keep it proportional. In 2008-09, the percentage of the general fund budget that went to these programs that we track, and Ms. Appledorn will talk about this more, was about 1.1%. And we feel that this year, the straight general fund recommendations that the governor has put forward are roughly proportional. However, what we've said is to uphold the integrity of the amendment, we have to make sure the benchmark that we've set is that we never go below 1% of the state general fund dollars in order to keep true with the constitutional language, which says that this money must supplement and not be used as a substitution for traditional sources of funding. So to keep that traditional sources of funding, we feel we must never go below 1% going forward. Unfortunately, what happens with the governor's proposed budget reductions in terms of general fund is in the out years, it becomes a planning document which actually drops us below the 1.1%. That's due to the fact that we're cutting the budget partway through the fiscal year, partway through the biennium, and also because the base is smaller. And as we go into future years, assuming the base grows again, we'll have to grow back in order to keep that proportionality in place. This concerns us very greatly, and we ask that the legislature uphold the will of the public and not let the allocation of state funds for environmental and conservation programs slip before this important benchmark of 1% of general fund allocation as the governor proposes. That's principle one. Principle two that we also stated in the letter and that we used again last year is that statutorily dedicated funds already in existence for Minnesota's Great Outdoors cannot be raided to pay for other budget items. The governor's budget misses the boat on this principle. In 2003, when we had our last, I don't know if it was our last, but you know, last really major budget crisis, dedicated funds were raided pretty heavily to help out the general fund. That was one of the events that really precipitated the public stepping forward and say, we have to do something to protect our funding base and provide new dollars. This year, however, the governor's budget harkens back to the old strategy. In 2009, when you did your budget last year, I'd like to say the legislature and the governor all did a very good job of protecting those dedicated funds, not dipping into them for one-time budgetary relief. This time we're going back to the old habits of 2003 in the governor's budget. What this means is that fees paid by people like boaters and people that use the parks, our outdoor recreational users, fees collected to fund recycling, All of these will be diverted to support other purposes, general operations of the state, and that is inconsistent with the intended purposes of the Constitution. To state it clearly and simply, this constitutes a raid that is inconsistent with the provisions of the Clean Water, Land, and Legacy Amendment. It is not in keeping with the intent or the will of the public, and it violates the plain language of the Constitution. We hope that you'll take this very seriously and listen to the public that we heard from just not so long ago. My colleague Cheryl Appledorn will outline some of the specifics of the statutorily dedicated funds and go into some of the numbers. In addition, my colleague Paul Austin will discuss a little bit about some of the new recommendations from the governor relative to inflow and infiltration. The third principle that we laid out in our letter is that capital investments for Minnesota's great outdoors, in order to be consistent with the Constitution, need to be kept at the 10-year average of 22.2% of the general fund of the GO bonds that have been enacted by the legislature. We recognize that this hearing today is not about bonding, but we do just want to say thank you for your consistent work on this principle. The governor's number was above that threshold. The House's number was above that threshold, even with the addition on the House late in the process of to make the bill over $1 billion large. The Senate was in support, and the bill that ultimately, the conference committee report, ultimately met this test. So we thank you for that and recognize that you have a significant challenge in meeting all of these requirements. But we believe that it is essential to keep the will with the public and to, I guess, not just keep the faith with the public, but also keep faith with the state's constitution. And Madam Chair, if I could get someone to just distribute these letters around, that would be appreciated. And let me turn it over to Cheryl Appledorn with Conservation Minnesota.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, my name is Cheryl Appledorn. I work with Conservation Minnesota, a nonprofit conservation organization that has, for 8 years now, since 2002, conducted an annual review of the governor's budget for conservation and environment. In each of our reports, which we do when the governor's budget comes out in February and then we do a wrap-up in the fall, we look at the impact of budget proposals on the five primary conservation agencies. We look at DNR, PCA, Bowser, Metro Parks, and the Department of Agriculture. While we're still finalizing our report on this year's proposals, we have identified some initial observations, and we hope to distribute the report by the end of this week. We'll be getting you copies soon. Our biggest concern with the current budget proposal is the degree, as Steve Morris mentioned, the degree to which the governor relies on his proposal on raiding statutorily dedicated funds. For the five primary conservation agencies, the governor takes a total of $9.56 million in statutorily dedicated funds, such as the Natural Resource Fund, the Game and Fish Fund, and the Environmental Fund, and transfers these dollars just directly to be absorbed into the general fund, not used for any more agency or conservation purposes. One example of these raids is that the governor takes over $800,000 from the water ref account in the Natural Resources Fund. And as Steve Morris mentioned, this account consists largely of boat registration fees and other receipts that are related to water recreation. The transfer will result in a direct reduction in work related to water recreation opportunities, including canoe and boating routes and other water access opportunities. So this is exactly the type of erosion of existing funds that legally the language of the Constitution was intended to prevent. In addition, beyond the constitutional question, we believe the use of dedicated funds to solve a general fund shortfall is a concern for two other reasons. One, these kinds of raids are really a breach of faith because they divert the funds that the citizens understand will be used for specific purposes. Citizens pay permit fees and charges with the understanding that the funds in these accounts will be used on programs related to those charges, and diverting any of the dollars in these accounts is problematic. Second, the raids on the dedicated funds are one time only. They don't go forward into the next biennium. So they do nothing to solve the ongoing state budget shortfall. With two small exceptions, these shifts do not carry forward into 12-13. So we believe that with the state forecasted to face yet another $1 billion shortfall in the out years, these transfers raise significant constitutional concerns. They're a breach of faith in terms of the intended use of the funds. And in the end, they really just kick the can down the road rather than contribute to a long-term solution of the state's problems. As Steve Morse mentioned, we're also concerned about the impact of the governor's general fund cuts on the next biennium. By our analysis, if the governor's budget were enacted exactly as it's proposed, the general fund budgets for the five conservation agencies would see $7.1 million of cuts for the remainder of the current biennium, and those cuts would grow to $10.9 million in 12-13. In the out years, the general funds for the five agencies would slip from $341 million total, that was the forecasted amount for the current biennium, that's where we started for this year, they'd slip down in the out years to $305 million. $35 million cut. And with that, the percentage of the general fund, of the total general fund that's allocated to those five agencies would slip below 1%, would slip to 0.86% in the out years. So although we're keenly aware of the enormous budget pressures that legislators face, we do urge you to look for ways to avoid this kind of erosion in conservation funds, and appreciate our opportunity to share our observations. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Paul Austin, who will talk about the specific concern we have with the Clean Water Fund.
Welcome, Mr. Austin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Paul Austin. I'm with the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. And I would just like to briefly talk about one specific proposal within the governor's supplemental budget that we think illustrates a slippery slope that we don't believe we should go down. The governor proposes $2 million annually to fund the Metropolitan Council's inflow and infiltration program. Now, that program in and of itself is not a bad idea, but there's a couple reasons we don't think it fits within the Clean Water Fund, at least in terms of this issue within the Constitution of supplementing traditional funding, not substituting for other sources of funding. The INI program is a very old program. As long as there have been sewer pipes in the ground, the people who manage those systems have been dealing with inflow and infiltration of groundwater or rainwater or cleaner water into the sewer system. So the fact that it's not a new program means that it was funded from other sources in the past, and funding it out of the Clean Water Fund now certainly doesn't sound like a supplementation to us. It sounds like a substitution. Secondly, we're having a hard time reconciling the program's purposes with the purposes of the Clean Water Fund itself. Most of the time when you're talking about I&I issues, you're actually talking about a cost issue. Communities are billed by the sewer agencies for the amount of wastewater that flows out of that community. The communities then turn around and bill their citizens for that cost. Communities don't want to pay for more wastewater than they're generating. When you have clean water flowing into a sewer system, it artificially inflates the amount of wastewater that's coming out of that community, and the community ends up paying for it. So when you look at the Met Council's literature on the INI program, it's a lot about cost containment. Well, in our mind, the Clean Water Fund is about clean water, cleaning up lakes and rivers and streams and making them fishable and swimmable, and cost containment within a sewer infrastructure, while an important thing to work on, shouldn't come from that funding source. We believe that the legislature recognizes this. The legislature, all of you, recommended within the bonding bill to fund I&I through that vehicle. We think that makes sense. We thank you for that. But we just wanted to hold this up as one very clear example of where we think substitution was taking place and something we don't want to get started anytime between now and the end of the amendment's lifespan. Thank you, Madam Chair. We'll stand for questions.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since it's my bill, I'll follow up. Mr. Austin, let me be clear on what you're saying. If we have $3 million in the bonding bill for I&I, or if there was additional traditional funding, then adding $2 million, would you consider that still substitution?
Madam Chair, Representative Hanson, we'd have to have a nice long conversation about how I&I prevention actually fits into the clean water goals that there would be. If you look at the Metropolitan Wastewater Treatment Plant as an example, That plant deals with INI around the cost issue and around a potential capacity issue. Well, most of the clean water standards that we are concerned about in the Mississippi River, downstream in the Metropolitan Plant, deal with drought conditions, low water flows. You don't have INI issues affecting low water flows by definition because it's during a drought. So connecting even the plant capacity and potential for an overflow at that plant to the water quality work that needs to be done downstream of the metro area is a very, very tenuous connection at best. And it would be the position of MCA that doesn't fit.
Madam Chair, Mr. Austin, you gave a very good answer on the policy or on the purpose, but not on the question of whether it was substitution if we provide traditional sources of funding or if we've got the money in bonding.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, one of the principles that we talked about last year it wasn't laid up in a letter as it was with the principles Steve Morris was talking about. It was this notion of supplementing traditional funding. Well, traditional funding for INI is a great thing. Supplementing it makes sense. We wouldn't say that that is a substitution. That's why it really comes back to the purpose argument in that scenario.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Morris, good to see you again.
Thank you.
You said proportional cuts, and I agree they should be. Yeah. However, you know and I know there are programs within that budget that are probably needed to be cut more than other programs. Do they all have to be proportional, or just the total has to be proportional?
Madam Chair, Representative Gunther, from our perspective at as a broad coalition across all of the various groups, and as you can also see in the letter, we also have a number of hunting and fishing groups that aren't in our coalition who've signed on. We want to focus our discussion on the overall level and keep it proportional. So it's really the size of the pie. Things will change.
Madam Chair, and to any of the three, separate from the averaging and reduction, there are other options that could be on the table relating to reorganization, and I think you were in the room where I asked Ms. Blackburn about some policy reorganization, so I'd like to ask you if your coalition or if you have personal opinions about mergers with agencies, specifically Bowser with the Department of Natural Resources or with the Department of Agriculture.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, I just like to offer a couple observations on reorganizations. And I spent a long time in the Department of Public Safety, and that agency, over the time I was there, was the subject of about three or four merger or disbanding or reorganizing discussions. And inevitably, those conversations would start around the notion that if we reorganize or disbanded or disperse these functions into other administrative agencies, that it would save the state money. By the end of those conversations, the conversation had turned completely over, and I think without exception, we all concluded it would actually cost the state some money to do that. So when you're looking at this issue of reorganizing and merging, I would just encourage you to be skeptical of cost-saving projections, because they are tough to come by. You have initial costs on the front end. And if you are doing it in an attempt to reduce the number of people who are actually employed, you also have a lot of attendant costs on the front end of letting people go as well. The other thing that I think you need to be very careful about, and on just speaking for MCEA, I mean, we've thought about this. You know, we don't have any great blueprint sitting in our back closet, but the real key always needs to be not how you're structuring the inputs, but how you're getting the outcomes. And I think that's where you have to be very careful when you're looking at taking an agency that has an on-the-ground presence and moving it into an agency that's much bigger, that some people have accused anyway, in the case of an organization like the DNR, of being very centralized. I know they work hard at pressing, you know, staff out. You have to take a look at what that would do to the delivery system. Is it impossible to merge? No. Does it take a lot of smart people and a lot of hard work to do it and probably some money? Yes.
And Madam Chair, if I could just offer a little bit of a follow-up, let me just concur with Paul Austin's comments as a former deputy commissioner over at DNR and having been involved in some realignments and reconfigurations. I just think the word here is cautious. Let's move slowly. Make sure that we're actually getting the outcomes. And that's what I would say, make sure that we're outcome focused. And we've talked about this some with some of our members. We're not for it. We're not against it. We're certainly open to looking at possibilities if the outcomes, the environmental outcomes, can be superior.
Madam Chair, and to follow up and to take it to the local level then, what about the delivery system at the local level? Should watershed districts, soil and water conservation districts, watershed management organizations, Met Council or the counties, is there an opportunity there for reorganization or re-engineering for delivery of service?
Well, Madam Chair, I'd take a whack at that. There certainly are opportunities to economize and improve the delivery system, but I also know that that's been looked at many times. It's terribly difficult. Go back to Arnie Carlson's, I forgot what it was.
Core
recommendations, you know, that set up these natural resource districts that, from a kind of intellectual perspective, made an awful lot of sense, but when they hit the ground, got no traction. So yes, there could be efficiencies gained. I just would really think twice about how much capital it would take in terms of cash as well as political capital and opportunity costs to actually make that happen.
I think it's important to concentrate on your discussion about outcomes. If you heard the testimony from Ms. Blackburn when she talked about the new clean water money, they were talking about measurable outcomes and the ability to do that with this new RFP that had gone out. And one of the things, just sitting on this side of the table and observing new programs like that one, seem to be able to move into the direction of measurable outcomes quickly, and people can concentrate, or they've been able to do that. But when we've been asking the agencies, the traditional agencies, for measurable outcomes or for traditional activities, what we get are not measurable outcomes, but measurable activities. And switching that paradigm from measurable activities to measurable outcomes is extremely difficult for the agencies that have been traditionally serving us. And it seems to me that that's, for reform, that's the biggest step that we need to take. It's not merging, that's shifting. It's getting those agencies that have been traditional to move to measurable outcomes.
And Madam Chair, I think that's a good a metaphor. It's not outcomes is not about shifting decks on the Titanic. It's about changing course away from the iceberg. And you know, if particularly in the water area, I believe that's absolutely critical, because for as long as I've been in this business, 25 years or so, we've really recorded activities that are incrementally better, but we never put them into the context of will they get us where we need to go in the time that we want to achieve it. And so I think we've had a fair amount of discussion of that. We have a newly functional water group within our coalition about the need to really be very clear on the outcomes with this new money, or someone else will be sitting here in another 23 years saying, now let me see, what was that? How much money did we spend on that water cleanup stuff? And gee, do we have fewer impaired waters? Because unless we're very clear, we stand real risk of just continuing to do what we've been doing, just doing more of it, but not moving the dial very far.
I think all of us are going to have to help with this water money having measurable outcomes. we've asked the Pollution Control Agency for measurable outcomes, and they do it in air, but not in water. So if you look at their outcomes for, they have a book out, and members, I hope you all have seen it and read it, a book out about TMDLs, and the outcomes are how many meetings you've had, and things like that. So they're not outcomes for water, they're outcomes for activities. And so all of us have got to work with the Pollution Control Agency to get to that point of measurable outcomes for water. We're not there yet, or even close.
And Madam Chair, and I know you know this, but I'd be remiss if I didn't add it to my comments. The thing, as you know, the outcomes for water can be, even if you're doing a really excellent job, can be a fairly long time frame. And, you know, oftentimes in an agency, you know, you have to report and do results at least annually or maybe quarterly, and then you really have to look to the activities, but we just have to make sure they fit into a framework that will get us at least modeled to get us where we need to go and that we're following that path. But, you know, the actual water quality outcomes, which is where we need to be oriented, will take some time, but we need some assurance that the activities actually will get us to that goal, not just move us in that direction.
Any other questions for this? Well, we appreciate your coming and helping us work through this. Please continue to do that. We don't have our target yet, so we can't comment on your comments. I expect we get it within the next couple of days.
Well, thank you for listening to us.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Bone, did you want to testify?
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Ray Bone, and I'm here representing the Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts. And Ron Harnack was going to join me as well. He represents the Red River Watershed Management Board, which is the joint powers of various watershed districts in northwest Minnesota. I'm here today to talk about the Drainage Assistance Cost Share Program and the reductions proposed by the governor and Bowser. The program that I like to focus on is the Drainage Records Modernization Program. Mm-hmm. In fiscal year 09, $500,000 was allocated for this purpose. And that was as direct recommendation from the Drainage Work Group. And the Drainage Work Group thought that this was a very important element in working on the drainage issue in Minnesota and something that we need to bring the drainage records up to date. And as a result, the legislature did grant that, and in the first year, 44 drainage authorities actually asked or applied for these funds, and 22 were either funded fully or partially. So clearly, there was a need there, and I think there continues to be a need there in that program. Now, you may ask, well, why is drainage record modernization important to watershed districts or drainage authorities? It's not just watershed districts, but obviously counties as well. You know, to do an adequate job of managing legal drainage systems, many times a reference to original information is needed. Quite often with viewers on reports, original descriptions, original petitions, and as-built designs. And also the drainage statute refers to these documents when following procedures outlined in the statute. In finding them with ease and efficiency, we believe, is very important. And literally some of the records is in the past, and some of the ones we've actually taken over, are akin to the shoebox type of situation. So some of them really need some work. The original records are required by statute to be kept forever, and obviously paper records will not last forever. Many of them already are very fragile and one of a kind. By scanning and digitizing these records and these documents, we can make numerous copies and then provide them not only for our own use but also for the public's use as well. And from time to time, the public does want to see these documents and wants to review the records, and by providing them access to a computer, we can actually allow them to look and make copies of these records for their use. And without this, eventually some of the records are just going to deteriorate And we believe, again, it's very important that we do get these on record while they're and digitized while they're still available. And I think one of the real important elements that I believe is with the entire TMDL process we have underway and how drainage is going to fit into all that, we believe it's extremely important that these records are available, to the drainage authority, but the public as well. We think that that's critical, and we think it's probably more important than ever. This is an ongoing effort, has been an ongoing effort. Last session, I think that $500,000 level dropped to $100,000 per year because of the reductions. What they're recommending this year, what the governor's recommending, what Bowser's recommending, is to drop that $100,000 for 011 totally. So basically eliminating program. We think that would be a mistake. We think we need to have this effort ongoing. Even at that level, I think it does keep it alive, and it does keep the drainage authorities looking at this as an issue that they really need to address. So we believe it's very important that we retain something in that program and that program not be eliminated. And then another issue, there's a small reduction in the drainage assistance program. That's going to hurt because the timely completion of the updated drainage manual probably won't take place. And then, again, as importantly, assistance to drainage authorities, we believe, is very important. You know, we need to start looking at 21st century alternatives to managing drainage in Minnesota. And without that kind of technical assistance from the state agencies, I don't know how we get there, very frankly. And I think the drainage assistance is something that I've been promoting for the last 5 or 6 years at Bowser and through Bowser, and we believe it's important, and it is an important function for Bowser to maintain, and we hope that you would feel the same way. At this time, I'd like to ask Ron Harnack to comment also from the Red Board's perspective.
Madam Chair, Ron Harnack, representing the Red River Watershed Management Board. And I'd just like to affirm some of Ray's comments on the, particularly on the drainage system records modernization. This is not something that is expected to be an ongoing thing in terms of getting the first part of it completed through all the drainage authorities. It really is a one-time funding scenario. We need to find the way and means to get it done now. And then the drainage authorities have the capacity to continue to maintain the viability of those drainage system records long term. Having them readily available in an electronic format is, as you well know, in all of these kinds of information exchange areas are really critical to adequately addressing some of the issues that we're going to be facing as we go down the road. The second part was the public drainage manual update. The drainage work team that the legislature kind of helped get started a few years back is a very successful interdisciplinary group that's dealing with a broad array of drainage issues. You're seeing legislation come forward this year that's refining the drainage law, and it's providing some additional capacities for drainage authorities to use to address the changing needs in the agricultural communities. Without this drainage manual that provides a update to the legislative changes and the discussions that are happening to the drainage work team, it's very difficult to get that information out so that it can be used on a day-to-day basis by the drainage authorities in their decision making. So we think it is a critical component that needs to stay in the system in some way, shape, or form. I know that both of these things are kind of one-time efforts, and if we could find the funding to get them done. I know there's ideas about LCCMR and other ways and means to do it, but I guess in the end, the proof's in the pudding. We keep saying that drainage issues are important and we must continue to address them in some way, shape, or form. But then we also continue to walk down the road of nickel and diming the funding components to death. And it's either got to be one way or the other. We got to get her done and then move forward in a sustainable way. So we are very supportive of sustaining the funding to those two programs. and hope that you give that serious consideration. And lastly, Madam Chair, if I might be able to comment on the DNR's budget reduction quickly. DNR is proposing to reduce their contribution to the USGS stream gauging program by $50,000 per year. And that is going to be a base reduction. And that does include four sites in the Red River Valley. And at a time when the legislature has authorized a comprehensive basin-wide long-term flood reduction strategy, when we're seeing climatic conditions that are changing, when we're seeing land use that continues to change, and that critical calibration of our watershed models cannot be done adequately without having good gauging, now's not the time in our mind to be looking at reducing the funding for these gauging systems. The watershed districts do share in the maintenance of these things, but we do feel that the state also has a long-term obligation for this basic information, and hope that they would continue to maintain that. It's about $8,000 per gauge is what this cost is. And I'll give you a couple examples. One of the gauges they're looking to reduce funding for is critical to the city of Roseau. It's the one gauge that is watched most during high water events. This gauge is used to determine the amount and extent and timing of the water that's coming, which is provides a direct relationship for the flood preparedness and response. It's kind of the one gauge that's put on the whiteboard in the city hall when they're looking to deal with flood predictions. So the gauge is very visible to the city and the county. The watershed district recently spent $5,700 to help secure the wing walls to this structure in cooperation with the USGS. And it's our understanding the USGS is also looking to even upgrade this particular station. We have another one at Twin Valley that's proposed for reduction that provides the National Weather Service with its prediction components at Twin Valley and the city of Ada. And again, as we're looking down the throes of significant flooding in the Red River Valley, we do not believe is the time to begin to reducing these kinds of things. We would have wished we would have had more time. Kind of sit down with DNR, sit down with the USGS and our watershed districts and try to work out some framework to be able to maybe more effectively or more efficiently share in the continuing of these. But we would ask that you consider not taking these reductions right now, or at least deferring them to 2011 to give us some more time to kind of work with these issues. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Members, any questions? Okay, we're going to take one question, and we do have some more testifiers I want to get up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Harnack, for bringing that up. And some of you may recollect when the DNR was testifying on their budget reductions the other day about the stream gauging situation. And I requested that they don't mess with areas where we have projects going on, and they intimated that they wouldn't. But I just want to reinforce, and I said it with the SWCD funds, let's don't shoot ourselves in the foot again when we're doing this, these budget cuts. If we've got projects going on and this is long-term strategy, let's keep it up. It's just going to cost us longer, cost us more to do it in the future. And same with SWCD funds. They bring us in money.
Thank you. Did you have a question, Representative Hanson?
Yes, Madam Chair. Mr. Harnack, if... on the stream gauges, are those a capital project? Do they last 20 years, a stream gauge project?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hanson, some of these have been in for far longer than that, yes.
Madam Chair, Mr. Harnack, so if the Senate and the Governor want to increase the flood damage mitigation money to $70 million, could you find $8,000 in that bonding money to fund those stream gauges?
Lieutenant Chair, Representative Hanson, it's a good question. I'm hoping that having time to communicate between the USGS and the DNR and the watershed districts, we would be able to find a way and means that we could address these in an effective and efficient manner, from whatever source it ends up coming from.
Madam Chair, Mr. Harnack, $70 million is a lot of money. And it seems like every year, every 2 years, we keep the general public, the general taxpayer, is being asked for more and more and more on flood damage mitigation. So,
Madam Chair and Representative Hanson, I appreciate that. And I also look at what we spend. Like, it's already started, if you saw TV last night. Start to sandbag the daylights out of some of these places already and spend millions and millions and millions of dollars, you know, to keep the water out, when really what we need to be doing is help holding the water where it falls.
Okay, I think that's not a debate we want to get into right now, because then then I would have to ask about all the additional drainage that is going on in the Red River Valley. So we don't want to go down that road right now. Thank you very much. Mr. Brandt. And are there any other members of the audience right now who would like to say a few words to us about this budget or the governor's proposed reductions? I don't see any. Mr. Brandt, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I can assure you that I won't be what stands between you and having to come back at 6 o'clock. I will be brief. Wayne Brandt, Executive Vice President, Minnesota Forest Industries, Minnesota Timber Producers Association. Minnesota Forest Industries members are manufacturers of pulp, paper, engineered wood products, lumber, and renewable energy from forest biomass. We've kind of expanded our focus a little bit since the last time I was in front of this committee. The Minnesota Timber Producers members are loggers, truckers, small sawmills, allied businesses from throughout the state. The handout that is going around is really something in response to a discussion that the committee had with the department during the hearing on budget outcomes. Some questions have been raised on how much job, how many jobs, what kind of economic activity are supported by the DNR's forest management program. My remarks today are going to be inherently narrow on these numbers. It's not to infer that all the DNR does in managing the forest is sell wood, because we all know that they do a vast number of additional things. This handout was shared with fiscal staff a few days ago. As you look at it, one of the key numbers is 26% of the wood that's used by the industry comes from DNR lands here in our state. So what that translates to is about 12,375 private sector jobs with a payroll of $600 million. State income taxes from those jobs total about $42 million. And the wood harvested on the DNR managed lands provides net state revenues of $19.7 million. And I know the committee's had some discussion on that. You'll note the footnote down there. And if you see the direct revenues and costs, the first little chart here in the middle of the page, we've got stumpage revenue and then the cost. The costs that we allocate in there are cruising, sale administration, sale layout, scaling, supervision, site preparation, planting, and timber stand improvement. We do not, in these numbers, allocate costs for inventory. We believe whether there's a timber management program, a timber sale program, that you'll be, that state will be doing inventories as the state does inventories of soils, of plants, of birds, and of animals. So we don't think it should be allocated towards the timber program. We don't include planning costs. Planning activities occur at many levels of government within the department. It's planning for waters, planning for parks, planning for SNAs. We believe whether or not there's a timber harvesting program, you're going to have planning costs. So I just want to be very specific about what our numbers do and do not include. We come up for 2008 with $5.6 million in timber sale costs in working with the DNR Division of Forestry. to look at those numbers. You've got a tough job. I don't envy you. Everybody always wants to sit on the fiscal committees because they're viewed as being amongst the most important. These are not fun times to sit on the fiscal committee. You've got difficult decisions to make in cutting these budgets. I don't envy you. I would just ask that you give consideration to the jobs and the tax revenues and the other revenues that are generated from this activity. The second point, briefly, there was a question the other day at a previous hearing on the Forest Resources Council and implementation of the Sustainable Forest Resources Act. We think that that program continues to provide outstanding value to the state in a number of different areas. The ongoing implementation, monitoring, and updating of the timber harvesting and forest management guidelines, the engagement for problem solving away from legislation, away from litigation that occurs with the landscape program for a very minimal amount of money, and the active engagement of citizens out around the state, and a host of other activities attendant to the Sustainable Forest Resources Act. We'd also note that if you look at the funding for that program and go back, I believe, three or four bienniums, the council was, and I am a council member, council was funded at, I believe, $1.2 million at that time. I think under the governor's proposal, it goes down to about $700,000. So there have been some substantial cutbacks. Dr. Zometa, the executive director, could speak to it better. The council has done, I think, a good job in levering both private and other foundation and other funds to accomplish its statutory obligations. So I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
I don't see any questions. Thank you for coming up.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Members, would you like to say a word, and then members can just point out a couple things before we go?
Yes, Madam Chair, very briefly. Dan Larson with the Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus. And the issue is primarily on the aids and credits portion of the governor's bill, but there's a real overlap in a reduction in the payment in lieu of taxes of the 6% recommended reduction. So Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus, 25 rural counties within the Association of Minnesota Counties, many of them northern counties, and particularly increasingly more important now on the western side of the state, where legacy dollars and other dollars are going towards the acquisition of lands that formerly were on the private tax rolls, now going public, and of course that's the payment program for the state to local governments for those type of lands. So I want the committee to be aware of that. We'll be addressing it more particularly in the tax committee, but just wanted to make sure I got on the record. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't see anybody else in the audience. Members, I want to call your attention to this handout in your from the PCA, which answers a lot of the questions, both to the House and the Senate questions. And I think this is going to be useful as we go forward in reducing budgets. Would someone like to move the minutes?
I'll move the minutes February 25, 2010 for approval, Madam Chair.
Representative Purcell has moved the minutes of February 25. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any objection? The minutes are adopted. Members, that is all of our business for today. I did invite folks to offer suggestions that we can write down for reducing the budget, and I will note for the record that nobody's offered me any suggestions for reduction, though I have gotten some suggestions for increases. And with that, meeting is adjourned.